McNeil. U.S. diplomat Gordon Sondland has ended his testimony after emphatically telling the impeachment inquiry targeting President Trump that there was a conditional deal withholding military aid to Ukraine unless it opened investigations to benefit Mr. Trump politically. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Gordon Sondland said President Trump and his lawyer Rudy Giuliani explicitly pushed for a quid pro quo, an Oval Office visit for political investigations of Democrats.
Everyone was in the loop. It was no secret.
House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff says Sondland's testimony is deeply significant and troubling. He said he had to be convinced to start the impeachment inquiry.
Not by the whistleblower, but by the actions of the president.
New York Republican Elise Stefanik says Gordon Sondland is not changing her mind.
When it comes to impeachable offenses, they have yet to point to a shred of evidence.
What did the president want from Ukraine?
I want nothing.
He says the Democrats want to drum him from office. Ed Donahue, Washington.
The impeachment inquiry into allegations President Trump sought to pressure Ukraine was the first topic on the agenda Wednesday night as Democrats competing to be the party's nominee in the 2020 election squared off in their latest debate. U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders called Mr. Trump perhaps the most corrupt president in modern U.S. history, but cautioned against making opposition to the president the sole focus in the push to defeat the president at the polls. He pointed to economic challenges faced by those who lack health insurance or housing and more. Candidates still have about 11 weeks before voting begins to definitively decide who will be nominated. The ex-military chief Benny Gantz informed Israeli President Reuven Rivlin on Wednesday that he has failed to form a coalition government, almost guaranteeing Israelis will head to the polls for a third time this year after political deadlock that paralyzed the government. This is VOA News. Syrian forces shelled a displaced persons camp in rebel-held Idlib Wednesday, killing at least 15 civilians, according to anti-government activists. The missiles set a number of tents on fire. Two missiles fell just outside a maternity hospital. And the White Helmet Rescue Group says six children are among the dead. Idlib province is northwestern Syria, is the latest major section of the country still under rebel control. A Russian brokered truce in August intended to de-escalate the attacks by both sides has just about totally collapsed. Iran's shutdown of domestic internet access as part of a crackdown on anti-government protests has stretched beyond 4 days, an unprecedented outage that has caused growing harm to the economy. London-based internet monitoring group NetBlox posted a tweet early Thursday in Iran saying the near-total internet shutdown had surpassed 100 hours since it began late Saturday. The Israeli military says its warplane struck dozens of Iranian and Syrian military targets outside of Damascus Wednesday in retaliation for a rocket attack on the Israeli-controlled Golan Heights the day before. But a war monitoring group says new Israeli airstrikes in Syria have killed 11 people. AP correspondent Charles de la Desmond.
The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the Israeli airstrikes targeted arms depots belonging to Iran's elite Quds force in two Damascus suburbs. The group says strikes also hit an airbase where air defense units are stationed. From the Syria side, the state news agency says its air defenses destroyed most of the missiles before they reached their targets. The Israeli military says the hits follow a rocket attack on the Israeli-controlled Golan Heights on Tuesday. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Somalia is one of the world's countries suffering the most from near-constant droughts, hitting waves and floods. Recent flooding in south-central Somalia affected 547,000 people. That's according to UN estimates at a time when more than 2 million are food insecure. Pope Francis arrived in Thailand to encourage the country's Catholic minority, AP correspondent Walter Ratcliffe.
Pope Francis has arrived in Bangkok to begin a tour of Thailand and Japan. He's on a mission to boost the morale of those countries' tiny minority Catholic communities and speak about issues of concern, including human trafficking and peacemaking. He'll highlight his admiration in Thailand for the community that has endured recent bouts of persecution, as well as their missionary ancestors who brought the faith to this Buddhist nation centuries ago. As Francis begins his Asia tour, he's enduring fresh opposition from Catholic conservatives in the U.S. over his just-concluded meeting on the Amazon, as well as a new financial scandal at the Vatican. I'm Walter Ratliff.
And I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Diaspora Congress demands the resignation of African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat.
We want him to resign for a number of reasons. First is the way the ambassador to the U.S. was terminated. It shows lack of competence in handling matters, especially matters of this nature.
Zimbabwe riot police use tear gas and batons on opposition supporters. Uganda's main opposition FDC is suing the police for human rights violations. Rwanda Defense Force dismisses allegations it was behind last Sunday's attack on Burundi. And Kenya's former attorney general challenges his ban from entering the United States over corruption.
I am against corruption, and the people of Kenya as a whole are entitled to full disclosure on the general allegations of corruption against me.
And the leader of Liberia's opposition Liberty Party dies in the United States. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. African Diaspora Congress, the ADC, is circulating a petition calling for the resignation of African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat. The Congress says Mahamat no longer represents the interests of Africans and peoples of African descent. This follows the removal of Dr. Arikana Kiobori Kwao as African Union Ambassador to the United States, effective November 1, 2019. The AU said in a statement earlier this week that programs initiated by Dr. Kwao and implemented with African Union funds had no formal approval from the AU Commission. Professor Apollos Mwao is the Secretary General of the African Diaspora Congress.
We want him to resign for a number of reasons. First is that the way the ambassador to the U.S. was terminated, it shows lack of competence in handling matters, especially matters of this nature. Because if you look at the letter of termination, it just left a whole lot to be desired. It says there that I'm honored to terminate your appointment. I don't know who says that. And it didn't catalog the reasons why she was being terminated.
You said that the African Union Commission chairperson never stated in his letter terminating the services of Ambassador Kwao. But earlier this week, we received a statement from the African Union stating that the programs initiated and implemented with African Union funds during Ambassador Kwao's tenure had no formal approval from the AU Commission.
That's a problem. One, let me say this, that particular audit they're talking about was done after her termination. Who does anything like that? It doesn't work that way. But anyway, if you look at the catalog of all the programs she initiated, in fact, they are things that we have to congratulate her and even encourage her for. But to turn around and say, well, she never received approval for them, we doubt that. In fact, I was talking to her too, and she said that those programs where she received approval for them, if she didn't, and she had to do so much with little money or with no money at all, then I think she still has to be encouraged.
So what impact do you think your petition can have? After all, you know, the African Union Commission chairperson was elected by African leaders.
We believe that our petition, particularly the first one we had, which had about 100,000 people, and maybe this ongoing one here, we know it may not force him to resign. But I know that in Western culture, in fact, when you see such number of people calling for your resignation, you know it is time to step aside. But if he doesn't, we believe that after all the African heads of state have seen the kind of outcry, the global response rejecting the decision of the chairperson of the AU, they should be able to start looking at him somehow and say, look, you know, is this what we want to do? They may be able to, they should really be able to ask him to step aside if he doesn't do that voluntarily. Because it's ruining the reputation of AU as far as we are concerned.
You said in the petition that in the event that Mr. Faki Mahamat remains in his position as head of the African Union Commission, French neo-colonial stranglehold on Africa will be maintained. What exactly are you talking about?
Yes, we are saying that there's this suspicion, which is, like I've said this before, that if you see the handwriting on the wall, that the pressure, the kind of statement, the kind of things in the lectures that Dr. Arakana has been given, it has been indicting the French, you know, for their hold on African economy, on Francophone countries. They've been, asking them to actually free them and grant them their economic independence rather than this money that they had, foreign reserve, being held in Paris, and then all the returns don't come to Africa, but go to France.
So how many signatures do you hope to get?
The first one we had about 100,000. This one that we just set out that factory must go, we also aim at about 100,000 or more. But we do hope, though, that he can, by the time he gets, if you just get the message, he will resign even before we take it to order level.
Okay, Professor Mua, thank you very much again. We are so happy to speak with you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Professor Apollos Mwau is the Secretary General of the African Diaspora Congress. He was speaking with us from Ohio. The African Union Commission did not respond to viewers' request for a voice comment. Zimbabwe riot police used tear gas and batons on Wednesday on opposition supporters and people who happened to get in the way as opposition leader Nelson Chamisa spoke at his party's headquarters. Rutendo Mawere reports from Harare.
For hours, police in riot gear had running battles in the central business district with MDC party supporters who gathered at the Morgan Tsvangirai house where the party offices are. Wielding batons and firing tear gas, police assaulted the supporters along with ordinary citizens who were carrying out their business in the area. An identified police officer who was giving commands said they did not want to see MDC supporters in the street.
We appreciate your political party, yes. But we are saying, please go inside, mind your business.
Henry Chimbiri, a journalist who was beaten despite showing his media accreditation card, spoke to VOA as he bled from the head.
They started attacking everybody, including myself. And so I had about 10 of them attacking me and they injured my head. I'm a journalist. I showed them my ID. I showed them my jacket and I was putting on my jacket. You see, it's all in blood.
A 27-year-old woman, Barbara Musambeva, was lying in the street. She said she could not stand and thought her leg had been broken by police baton. She said she was not part of the MDC supporters and had been on her way to visit a sister. A party supporter, who is also a counselor, Keith Charumbira, said he ran to safety and that what happened was unacceptable.
This is a serious operation against the people of Zimbabwe. If you have just have a look, this was just someone to speak. It is on the head office with his own political party. Then people get to distract this and so forth. And then if you find out that passerbys, people who are very innocent, who have to do their day-to-day shoppings, to do their work, have been harassed, tortured, you know. Some right now, they are in critical positions where they are in need of medical attention. So in a country where we are saying we need a peaceful Zimbabwe, there is no need for the police to fight people. Police must be found protecting people.
A political analyst, Ernest Mudzenki, said he did not see anything wrong with a political leader addressing his followers.
The MDC president wanted to address, and surely it's his right to address, and as a political player, he is allowed to play politics, and playing politics includes issues like addressing masses, and if people are to be barred from merely addressing, then one wonders where we are going as a country.
Addressing the media, Chamisa blamed the government for failing to uphold human rights.
As I entered Harvest House, I was shocked to see the behavior and conduct of the police. And I don't believe that they are police officers. Why would you beat people who are at their head office? Is MDC a banned party? Are we a prohibited organization? If you tell us that we are a prohibited organization, tell us. Then we can look at other methods that are used by banned organizations.
But don't lie to us that we are not banned when you are treating us as a banned organization.
Chamisa added that while the 2017 military intervention that led to the ouster of longtime President Robert Mugabe, he had provided hope for Zimbabweans, things have gotten worse for ordinary people. A police spokesperson was not immediately available for comment. The government has denied it is cracking down on dissent and said it was not involved in dozens of alleged kidnappings and beatings of activists. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 21st. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 and a half minutes past the hour. This week, U.S. officials imposed a travel ban on former Kenyan Attorney General Amos Wako, citing his alleged involvement in what the State Department called significant corruption. At a news conference Wednesday, Wako denied the allegations and denounced the ban, which prevents him, his wife, and his son from traveling to the United States. Rael Ombuo reports from Nairobi.
U.S. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo announced the travel ban on Wako and his family in a statement released Monday. The U.S. has criticized Wako several times over the years for not doing enough to halt corruption during his 20-year tenure as Attorney General from 1991 to 2011. At a news conference Wednesday in Nairobi, Wako, now a member of Kenya Senate, criticized the U.S. allegations as vague and unjustified.
I am against corruption, and I believe I as an individual and the people of Kenya as a whole are entitled to full disclosure on the general allegations of corruption against me. These nebulous accusations and aspersions do not help in the fight against corruption and can in fact be defamatory in nature.
Wako served under the administration of Kenya's second president, Daniel Moi, which was engulfed in numerous corruption scandals. The country's judiciary was almost defunct at the time and had a poor record of convicting high-level officials. This is the second travel ban issued to Wako by the U.S. The first one was issued in 2009 after a disputed Kenyan presidential election that triggered deadly post-election violence. Wako demanded the details of his corruption allegations to be made clear. The U.S. statement Monday made no mention of specific cases where Wako acted to aid corruption or failed to take action against it.
This therefore leads me to demand that if indeed the United States of America is a valued and serious partner in the fight against corruption, let them share with me and also make it public for the Kenyans to know the full particulars of the allegations of corruption against me.
The travel sanctions were also imposed on his wife and son unfairly, in Wako's view.
Even if I committed the sin of corruption, assume I committed it, which I'm emphatically denying, it would be my personal responsibility and my wife and son, and indeed all members of my family, should not be punished for my sins.
High-level corruption cases in Kenya have a history that stretches back to the country's independence in 1963. Over the years, the U.S. has often used travel sanctions as an instrument against those they see as aiding corruption in Kenya and other countries. The 2018 Corruption Perceptions Index by Transparency International listed Kenya as the 144th most corrupt country out of 175. Rael Ombuor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Members of the Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, Uganda's largest opposition party, say they are suing police officers that are involved in alleged human rights violation. This comes days after some members of the Ugandan police tear gassed and pepper sprayed to disperse opposition rally and injured former FDC President Dr. Chisa Besigye. Mugumi Davis Rakariji reports.
John Chikonyogo, FDC deputy spokesperson, told reporters this week his party will sue police officers that target their members. He said his party will start with officers that are involved in a fracas with former FDC head Colonel Chisa Besigye on his way to address party members sometime last week. In videos that were circulated on social media, some two police officers were seen, one smashing window screen of Dr. Besigye's car, while another sprayed him with some unknown substances believed to be pepper spray. Chikonyogo says such acts contravene Uganda laws, including the Constitution and Enforcement Act.
This is in line with the Human Rights Enforcement Act 2019, which was assented to on the 3rd March 2019. which clearly defines acts of torture, detention of suspects beyond 48 hours, and denial of right to fair hearing, among others.
According to the Enforcement Act, public officers such as police are individually liable for violation of persons' rights or freedoms committed either individually or in a group. In July this year, Martin Okoth Ochola, Uganda police chief, sent a circular to all police officers in which he informed them to respect human rights while doing their work. Chikonyogo says the party is suing the errant officers for what he says will benefit the police force and other citizens.
We are doing this not because of Dr. Vesije. We are doing it because we wanted to stop with Dr. Vesije and those who are tortured. We don't want any other Ugandan to be tortured from today henceforward, and you go away with it.
Pole Namaye, Uganda police deputy spokesperson, denies police of any wrongdoing. But she told VOA the FDC is free to sue members of the police like any other citizens.
We believe that we are doing the work to secure the country. But if anybody feels aggrieved by the way in which the work has been done, then they have a right to seek for justice.
Uganda police has usually invoked the infamous Public Order Management Act to disperse opposition rallies. The law requires people intending to hold a rally or a public meeting to seek clearance from the police. Livingstone Sewanyana, who heads Uganda Human Rights Network, says that law is ambiguous.
Under a multi-party political dispensation, parties are free to organize and rally their members. When they do so and they are put dispersed, such an act deserves to be challenged in court.
FDC has not given a timeline as to when they will sue the police officers. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarenjeni, Kampala, Uganda.
The Rwanda Defense Force is dismissing allegations that it was behind last Sunday's military attack on Burundi. Burundi announced on national television that the assailants came from Rwanda. This comes as Rwanda, which is the chair of the East African Community, has postponed the EAC Heads of State meeting that was supposed to discuss normalizing tensions among EAC member countries. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali, Rwanda.
That's Major Emmanuel Gahungano, spokesperson of Burundi's Ministry of Defense. He explained where the assailants came from. After the attack, that group of assailants has gone back to Rwanda. Burundi says the assailants attacked two military barracks in Cibitoki province. The government has not yet detailed its laws, but local residents said dozens of soldiers were killed. Rwanda dismisses the allegations. Lieutenant Colonel Innocent Munyengango told VOA that Rwandan soldiers had nothing to do with the attack and that the only allegation came on Burundi National TV. He says we have no idea of that attack. Burundi has not yet even claimed through proper diplomatic channels that should be followed when there was any problem. Burundi's spokesperson only said the assailants came from Rwanda, but he hasn't explained whether it was Rwanda Defense Force.
I don't know.
Since a failed coup to overthrow Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, in 2015, relations between the two countries have deteriorated. Burundi accuses Rwanda of harboring groups that want to topple the Bujumbura government and giving them training. On the other hand, Rwanda accuses Burundi of being the source of rebel groups wanting to attack Kigali. For President Paul Kagame, Burundi has been provoking Rwanda.
We have had all kinds of provocations from Burundi, and we have not fallen for that. We have not been sucked into these provocations, and because I think that would be giving them what they want, and also trying to prove their point that they have no other problem except Rwanda.
Currently, there are many thorns in East African Community relations. Rwanda also has tensions with Uganda, the body that normally would help smooth things over is EAC. But analysts see it failing to speak with one voice. Recently, Rwanda announced the postponement of the Head State Summit. Olivier Nduhungirehe, Rwanda's state minister in charge of East African Community, says one president suggested the postponement. He says the postponement was not suggested by Rwanda, and it doesn't have anything to do with Uganda tensions. The meeting was postponed to July or February just because one president suggested so. Tensions among East African Community member countries have paralyzed crossings and left thousands of people unable to trade as usual. Ejen Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
In Liberia, the leader of the opposition Liberty Party, Charles Walker Bromsky, has died at age 68 after months of protracted illness. Reports quoting the family said he spent some time at the Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, before being moved to his home in Virginia, where he died Wednesday. The late Councilor Bromsky was a three-time presidential candidate. Senator Nyombli Kanga Lawrence is the new political leader of the Liberty Party. He says Councilor Bromsky's death is a loss not only to the Liberty Party, but also to Liberia as a whole.
We regret to announce the death of our political leader, our father, and our vision bearer. It is very devastating. I arrived in Liberia a few hours ago, and I got a call from Mrs. Bromsky announcing the death of our political leader. And the party will make an official statement tomorrow as we gather at the party headquarters at 9 o'clock a.m., but we will remember him as a dedicated family man, a renowned lawyer, and our political leader, a man of integrity, a man who has trained and mentored some great leaders in our country. We are very saddened by this, and we pray that God, our God, will take control of our grief. This is a loss not just to the Liberty Party. This is a loss to the entire country.
As you mentioned, it's a loss not just to Liberty Party, but a loss to the entire country of Liberia, because we know that the late Councillor Bromsky ran for president twice. So could you tell us what this means also for the entire country of Liberia?
Well, there's a loss to the entire country. We received several calls tonight, and we still are receiving calls from political leaders and former standard bearers. I've spoken to Ambassador Boyka, Mr. Cummings, some of our elders and chiefs in this country. Before the news was even confirmed, they got us as a Roman, and we had to make the confirmation tonight. And everyone is saddened by this, but tomorrow we're going to meet, make an official statement, and we hope that all of us as a country will look at this and pray for peace and pray that whatever Councilor Bromsky fought for as a leader of our party, that we remember that as we mourn him and look forward to making sure that those values are implemented in our country.
Senator, we do thank you very much again for taking the time to speak with us under these conditions.
Thank you.
Senator Nyombli Kanga Lawrence is the new political leader of the Liberty Party. She was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. The African Diaspora Congress, ADC, is circulating a petition calling for the resignation of African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat. The Congress says Mahamat no longer represents the interests of Africans and peoples of African descent. This follows the removal of Dr. Arikana Chiobori-Kwawo as African Union Ambassador to the United States, effective November 1st, 2019. The AU said in a statement earlier this week that the programs initiated by Dr. Kwao and implemented with African Union funds had no formal approval from the AU Commission. Zimbabwe riot police used tear gas and batons on Wednesday on opposition supporters and people who happened to get in the way, as opposition leader Nelson Chamisa spoke at his party's headquarters. And that's it for this Thursday, November 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti, Washington, wishing you a very, very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Sudan's president and chief rebel leader postponed the formation of a unity government for another 100 days. Inside the political turmoil in South Sudan, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
On December 5th, Border Crossings will bring you the greatest songs inspired by the soul genre. You'll hear smash hits from Three Dog Night, find out. And George Michael. If you like these tracks, you'll love our Soul Inspirations theme. December 5th on The Voice of America.